The Magic Podcast, hosted by Lloyd Barnes and Craig Petty. Your all-access, behind-the-scenes insight into the current happenings of the magic industry, where Craig and Lloyd will thrust themselves deep inside your ears every Wednesday to rant, dissect, and give you their raw and unfiltered views on the art of magic. So, lock your door, take out your deck, and brace yourself for the Magic Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Magic Podcast with the ever-excited Welsh Wonder Wizard himself, the only person in any podcast around the world that really doesn't want to be the co-host of the podcast, but I drag him out of bed anyway and force him to be on this every single week. It is Lloyd the Animal Barnes. How are you doing, Lloyd?
I hate my life. And I'm here with Craig.
Thanks for that build-up, bro.
I can't be fucking bothered. You know, guys, we're recording this exactly 12 hours before it's being posted. It's 3 minutes past nine. We've been on since 8:30. Well, 25 to nine, not 8:30. We were going to do it by then, but I needed a coffee and grow a tail. So we had to delay.
And then we kind of started showing each other card tricks, got distracted. And then. But I saw on social media that you bought a ticket to the South Downside Convention.
Dude, I fucking have. I'm going.
Following through. Are you excited?
I absolutely followed through more than once the last few days. I'm really excited. I'm really excited for the convention. And I don't mean this in any knock to convention. I got a train ticket and I'm mega fucking excited for the train.
I love the train. I catch the train everywhere. I catch the train everywhere. Trains are my favorite thing in the world. Like, I could spend hours traveling. I sound like a really sad train spotter, but I just love traveling on trains. I always have. I just think it's great.
It's a luxury, isn't it? Like, no airport for a start. So you stroll into a train station, get on a train, the next thing, a few hours later, you can't really do a lot other than when you drive, you're sat thinking about driving. I can't think straight on flight. So I normally create on flights, but I don't enjoy the whole process. And you're knackered and you're grubby. But I'm just excited, to just sit on a train and chill. I'm going up with little Sammy Sugarman, so that will annoy the fuck out of me. But I do have noise-canceling headphones. I'm kidding. We'll have a good jam session on the train. And then, we get to Newcastle. Alex is picking us up from the station and getting us to our Airbnb.
Alex McAleer.
Alex Bow.
Yeah.
He's picking us up from the... He kindly offered to pick us up from the train station. And then 4 days of magic. I'm actually hyped, yeah.
And you got some fantastic... We talked about the names last week. We don't need to mention them again, but it's going to be some great guys that you can hang out with. And it's going to be a smaller convention, so you're going to be able to actually sit down and session and so on.
Mate,
so
65 quid for 3 days.
It's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous price.
If it wasn't for the fact that there's a very good chance I would get divorced, I would go over and I would go as well. But unfortunately, Sarah will divorce me if I go, especially with what my November is shaping up to be like. So,
I've also been to another magic thing this week. I went to the Cardiff Magic Society EDC meetup night.
What's that like?
Well, we just sat there and did card tricks. It was amazing.
Card tricks aren't fucking EDC. Tricks aren't an everyday carry. Okay, a magician might carry.
I'm kidding. We talk about apps and other things as well. But we did end the night after like 2 or 3 hours of jamming out a few tricks, and it was amazing. I've just felt like getting out of the house loads lately. I've been in such a good place that I don't know, just had lots of time, and I was like, I want to go and hang out with magicians. And the coolest thing ever happened, man.
What?
And let me tell you this. Well, cool. I think you'll definitely appreciate this. So they have a magic library there, and so you can go in and swap books back and forth. but the library is sort of like portable, so it goes between people's houses. Somebody looks after it at certain times, and obviously it's a finite amount of space. Anyway, they have this gigantic bag for life. and a big fucking box of magazines. Okay. All these different magic magazines from over 70 years old, some of them. I'd say about 2,000 magazines, roughly. Mm-hmm. I mean, as in, it took three people and my backpack to carry these magazines. Anyway, what they said was, look, we got all these incredible books. We do not have room for these magazines. And it's really sad, but they are going to have to go into the skip tonight. So they said, everyone have at them. So everyone started tucking in, taking as many magazines as they wanted, digging through, looking for stuff. And by the end of it, they went down from like 2,200 to like 2,000 magazines. And I said, look, are these actually going to the skip now? Because I don't want that to happen. They said, yes, these are genuinely, like, we're closing the door because it was the very last few minutes of the night before they turned the lights off. And I was like, I feel like a fucking thief, but I don't want these to go. I'll put them in the boot of my car and I'll keep them. And they're like, yeah, do it. So the boys all helped me like lug them to the car. And now I am the proud owner of some fucking incredible, absolutely incredible. These magazines are like artwork, by the way. And I'm finding this one, what's this? This is The Magic Magazine by Max Andrews from 1953. 25 cents, it says on the front. Oh. I'm just showing you stuff. The magic info, magic gram, abracadabra. What I'm also finding in between them all is like envelopes with handwritten letters to magicians back and forth from like 1950s and 60s and 70s and signed things, books that have been donated by certain magicians to the library or to other places that have been sent back and forth. I literally have been gifted an absolute fucking gold mine. And if not for the hand-drawn artwork alone and the colors, and it's pure inspiration, like absolute pure inspiration. So I've been going through it. I can't believe it, actually. There's like Lincoln Ring magazines in there from 1973. I think it's 1970. What is it from? Oh, I don't know. But that's just the stuff that I got into my backpack. I haven't even gone into my car to get them out of the boot yet. The box and the massive fucking bag that you could put a Welsh spy into. It's crazy.
Well, the only issue that I would have if that happened to me is how I would explain to Sarah that I'm bringing 2,000 magic magazines home and dumping them in a house that's already brimming full of magic.
Well, that's the thing. The first mistake would have been telling her in advance. I told Kaylee after the fact.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. I like that.
Yeah. And the second thing, I was like, oh, you could help me design a lovely looking bookshelf. And Kaylee was like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll help you. And I was like,
yeah. Manipulation as well. Yeah.
But the thing is, we just spent like a month clearing out as much of the house as we can so we can move when we sell. And now I've just brought in something which is going to take up more space than probably half the shit that we've
got really
eradicated. So there we go, Kaylee. Enjoy that.
Well, I have every single edition of Abracadabra, from the very first one to the very last one.
No,
leather-bound volumes. And there's many times where I'll go down at night.
These ones?
Yeah, those. I there's many times where I'll go down at night and I'll just read them, and it's fascinating. My favorite thing to read in Abracadabra are letters. Like letters to the editor and letters back and forth, because it's like internet forums from like the 50s. Because what happens is magicians, they just publish letters, and magicians are like moaning about stuff. And then the following edition, there'll be a letter back from a magician to another magician with a letter moaning about. So it's just so funny. It really is. It's like we didn't have the internet back those days, but we still had arguments, and it was still a thing in the magic community.
Well, that's good to know that we've always been cunts. The other thing they got in there is stuff like there's the Hamley's brochure of magic tricks. So it's just I think it's from 19. Oh fuck it! I'll have to level it. But it's just old magic advertisements. Mm-hmm. But like it's a thick brochure, and it says to all of our friends across the pond, please remember to add 10% to the value of your product. And I don't know. It's just really cool. It's literally like stepping through a doorway back in time to see how they think. And it's so funny. I don't know if you've ever like read is it Martin Gardner's Encyclopedia of Impromptu Magic?
Magic, yeah.
It's so funny to see the disparity, and I suppose it runs true to this day. not is it the word? Is the word disparity the separation between, like, there's some tricks which you think this is not even a piece of magic.
Yeah.
And then you read some things, you think, oh my God, how is this not the trick that everybody performs every single day now? You get such a wide variant range of quality of effect. I know that sounds really horrific or bitchy to say. I don't mean it like that. But, you know, like in like Martin Gardner's book, Impromptu, the Encyclopedia of Impromptu Magic, there's one trick where you run around in a circle with your arms waving out and you pretend to be an airplane and then go and land on the ground. Like, it's not magic. It's not even funny. You just think, fuck off. Yep. You're in the way of the telly, you know? But like, so there's examples of things like that. And then there's one I took a photo of last night, actually. Anyone who listens to the Black Art podcast, you'll already have heard this. But I'm saying this word, I don't mean it. This is the name of the trick. It's called the dwarf vanish, or the nowadays it's supposed to be called the little person vanish, or you could use a child. You could actually probably use Ryland for this, I think. But what it is, it's a way to hold up, it's a bit blurry on your screen. It's a way to, you stand in front of the child or a dwarf, as they say in the book, right? I mean, little person, and you put a cloak in front of them and you yourself, right?
Yeah.
And you wave it up and down and the person vanishes.
Can't imagine that the
little... And it's a practical method to an extent.
I can't imagine the little person would be very happy about that happening to them. I imagine it would make them a little short.
Oh, God.
Right. What?
Are we going to get cancelled?
We're probably going to get cancelled. Does it help if I say that my favourite stand-up comic is Brad Williams? Have you ever seen Brad Williams, by the way?
No, I don't know.
He's the funniest stand-up comedian of all time. And he's a little person. He's probably, he's an actor. You'd recognize him from film and TV, but he also is a stand-up comic. And he is, anybody who's listening to this, just go and check out Brad Williams. He is the funniest stand-up comic.
Is this
ever.
You basically saying your joke was not offensive because you like another little person?
No, it's that I got that joke from Brad Williams.
Okay.
Set is where I got that joke from. So he's allowed to talk about how to make those. Like, I'm more than happy to make a joke about not having any hair. Like, you know, one of my lines when I go up to people when I'm performing close-up magic is, I'll look for the bald guy. And I'll go, sir, I want you to pick a card. I'm going to look away so I don't get the reflection off your forehead. And immediately everyone's like, ah. And I just go, hey, I'm glad to make that joke. I've got the same affliction. So, you know, I'm joking.
Would it be the same if I did it, though? Mind you, I'm balding, but on the back.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. I'm balding like a tiger, like a leopard.
Anyway, we were talking about vanishing dwarves. Carry on.
Oh, it's just amazing. Like, I just literally flipped through one page of it last night when I was on the call. And I just like, that's just... I don't know. I think it's just the combination of the writing style, the hand-drawn illustrations, the ideas, and the design of the booklets themselves and the magazines themselves, the colours they use, or the palette even. It's so inspiring. And what I was thinking, I've got a lot of doublers. Like, there's a stack of one, I think it's Abracadabra magazine, which is, there's going to be like 20 in the stack. And I would love to send them out to people for free, but it's paying the royal fucking bill, isn't it? But what I might do is take some of them. I don't know if this upsets people, but anything that I've got like loads of doublers off in the piles, I might take some of the cool looking pages out and then make them into like some sort of tabletop art and then put epoxy over it or something. You know what I mean?
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Should be quite cool.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That would be good. But yeah, very exciting. You'll have to tell me if you see any hidden gems. Anything in there that's like just amazing, because that's the problem. A lot of tricks that are published in those, because the internet wasn't around back then and the only way to really share knowledge was through magazines like that, a lot of tricks that got published in magazines, people don't remember them, you know, because, you know, people will perform them and when they die that secret's not maybe passed on. It's why a lot of people say, you know, everything that's come out these days has probably been created before. That's probably true to a certain extent, but nobody remembers it. Like, nobody ever remembers it, because these magazines and these books, you just don't, you know, you just don't see the material in there anymore. But as I say, I've got every single edition of Abracadabra, and what I like to do is I like to just go down there, read them, and just look at the tricks that they've published. And you look at them and you just think, oh my God. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Like you say, Lloyd, you know, why is not every single person doing this trick? Well, it's because those tricks just die away, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's sad. It's part of the reason why, like, I sort of in the last couple of years, specifically, I sort of changed my thinking on crediting. Where it used to just be like you try your best to credit, which is normal. But my approach, not to credit it, I suppose it's creative, but my approach nowadays is that the trick that you've come up with has definitely been done before. Your job is to find who the fuck did it.
Yeah.
So my attitude for everything is I haven't created this. I hope I have. I've looked as hard as I can, and up until this point in time, I can't find who did it, but nothing is new under the sun. Because you just find the most obscure stuff in these books. I remember thinking one of the coolest like creative visuals for a card trick was Daniel Garcia's Fallen.
Yeah.
It's just such a unique sort of presentation, I felt. And then I think he was at Blackpool. I seen him lecture somewhere and he was like, yeah, I thought this was original. And then I discovered it was like 200 years old by a Japanese magician. Was buried in some book somewhere. And it's like, holy, you know, what the fuck?
Yeah. That's insane.
So
that's crazy. It really is.
But I mean that would be interesting to cover one day on a podcast is the depths of crediting and how far can you go with it.
Well, one of the people that was so knowledgeable about crediting and about everything like that was Max Maven. And unfortunately, Max is no longer with us. But everybody I spoke to when it came to Max Maven always used to say to me, hey, he'd have the answer to everything. You know, he'd immediately know every single crediting question that you ever could possibly want.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that from a lot of people. I remember, I think I've seen like articles in other magazines where people would go to him when they were historians would go to him when they were stuck.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I don't know how I've got onto this in my head, but I just wanted to mention it. Did you go to the IBM close-up convention recently?
The IBM close-up convention?
You mean, I don't know if it's a close-up convention, the IBM something.
No, it's called the IBM convention. We were going to go. We'd actually booked accommodation. We had to cancel it because it was taking place at the same time that Rylan was in LA. So
because I remember you talking about it a lot.
Yeah, we weren't going to make it back in time. We went last year. We're definitely going to go next year. It's one of my favorite conventions.
I met for the first time a guy called David Gemmell at the Cardiff Magic Club. And he's originally from Portsmouth, now lives in Wales. I think he's lived in Wales for, you know, a decade or so. My first time crossing paths with him, though. And, do you know what? It's the moments that I live for in magic. There's a few videos of him floating around on Facebook and him performing stuff, mainly like to camera. He's an old, well, I wouldn't say older at all. He's just saying he's got his 60th birthday coming up. He doesn't look a fucking day over 40. And he turns out he challenged himself to enter the card close-up category of the IBM convention. Pretty sure it's the IBM. I think it was. And he fucking won it.
Wow.
He came third overall.
Yeah, you're talking about the Rovi Trophy.
The Rovi Trophy. And he said he wanted to bring it back to Wales because Rovi was a Welsh magician.
Yeah.
Rovi is the name Ivor spelt backwards. And the guy is just an absolute card ninja. It was tabled card work. So basically like just a demo. I think his own words were like, it was just one long demonstration of false shuffles and cuts. But like this, I've seen many FISMs. I've been really fortunate to go to a lot of them. The way the guy handles cards, the way he performs is like it was his first ever competition. There's a video of it. There's a full 10-minute Akron video. He was as cool as a cucumber. Like, placid. Placid performing. Two people on stage and whole front, you know, whole audience, cameras on him. First ever contest. This guy, like, is just living in the valleys of Wales. Doesn't, you know, do big things like that. And I'm blown away and fascinated by him. And
that's right.
I don't know. It's just one, you know, those moments that's like the moments that I live for in Magic. It's just finding or bumping into someone that's just on another level. You know, you look up to them in awe and just fascinating. Sorry, I just wanted to mention, it just got me super excited.
You know what? I love hearing that. And the Roby Trophy is seriously a huge accolade. It really is. Dave Forrest has won that in the past, and some really great card guys.
I heard Dave Forrest is lecturing in Bristol in the next few days.
Is he? I'd love to go and see that.
I'd love to as well, but I'm not here. I'm in Newcastle. But yeah, in Mark Bennett's place in Smoke and Mirrors, Dave Forrest is going to be actually, I bet it's going to be amazing.
It will be.
I know a lot of people are heading up.
Dave's well and truly back, which is good.
Yeah, it's always good to see people like that back in the community.
Talking about card work, do you do a bottom deal?
No. I can attempt it. I can half do them. I put a bit of practice, but I really wouldn't.
I've challenged myself to properly learn a bottom deal, and I'm not very good at it yet. I will be. But, I'm just learning it. Because I've got a lot. I don't really do gambling routines, but I've got a lot of applications that a bottom deal would be perfect for. And I just think it's a tool that would be worth having in my wheelhouse. And I don't really do it. I don't really do a bottom deal at all. I've never learned it. You're doing that really well.
No, I don't think. Well, I'm not. I don't know. Yeah, kind of. I would be able to, I think, and I have at times used them. I would be comfortable doing them, performing to somebody who's chilled. But if I was under scrutiny, I'm definitely demonstrating to other magicians. I would say, please watch somebody who can do this.
Tell you who had a good bottom deal, Mitch.
Yeah, surprisingly, his is really fucking good because he's a mentalist. That's why I say surprisingly.
But he's got some incredible card work. Yeah, it's really weird. But he's a good guy, really good guy. By the way, changing the subject, have you noticed the Blackpool Magic Convention have started announcing names for Blackpool?
Yes, I've seen Anna de Guzman's been announced.
Anna de Guzman's been announced, which is great. You know, strong female doing a lot for...
I wonder what she's going to do, because I've said it before, I know her as a flourisher. Remember, like, working there on a flourishing shoot.
I haven't watched her AGT acts. I mean, she did some good stuff on AGT, so, you know. I reckon she'll be fine. She's doing a lecture, and what's she doing here? I've got it in front of me. First lecture, Anna will be performing and lecturing. So nice. I don't think she'll probably be on stage, although she might be. I don't know. She'll probably be doing close up, I imagine. But yeah, Anna's great. And
the other thing announced
is, I don't know this person, Young Min Kim. Champion Young Min Kim appears at Blackpool 24 with one of the most unique and emotional acts in Magic. He hails from Busan in South Korea, and is one of the elite magicians from that country that have taken the magic world by storm. At Blackpool 24, you'll be able to see his incredible performance, where the art of illusion and theatre collide to make one of magic's most exciting acts.
Wow.
So there you go. That's on top of the announcement of last year that Matt King's going to be there.
What?
Matt King is going to be at...
Have you seen his show in Vegas?
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, so I took Kaylee, Cody Nottingham, and his wife all went to see it. We rushed down the strip. We made it with minutes to spare.
Did he eat a guinea pig?
Huh?
Did he eat a guinea pig?
He did eat a guinea pig. He does like his vanish off a little like wheelbarrow thing. It was just fucking brilliant. Like, absolutely fucking brilliant.
Right, well, he's going to be it. So that's three names announced: Matt King, Anna de Guzman, and Young Kim. Whatever his name is, young.
It's funny, when we went to Blackpool last year, one of the few like brief bits of magic we got to see was I can't remember the guy's name, but he did the music. He did the stage manipulation act, but to music, you know, where like the cards go appear one by one as the volume goes up, bump bump bump, one by one, and things like that.
And he was on BGT. If it's the guy, I think he. Yeah,
he was on BGT, and it was one of the best act Kaylee had seen at Blackpool.
Yeah, he's...
It always like stands to serve me, like to remember what lay people enjoy, you know, as magicians. Because sometimes I try not uppity, but like I like really like that feeling of magic.
Yeah,
but you have to remember that sometimes stuff like that is just crazy and it's fun. And Kaylee was literally just sitting there like clapping and like whooping. It was, but he is phenomenal as well. But yeah, just
talking about styles in magic. Can I be honest? And this is going to be a controversial opinion that I think is going to get me cancelled immediately. But, you know, I don't care. It's only my opinion. I am getting absolutely fucking sick and tired of the Spanish style of magic.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm maxing in the building. You can't diss the Spanish style of magic.
It's just a bit too chaotic. It's fine. But every single Spanish magician seems to do exactly the same style. And it kind of works when you're... Juan Tamariz, it works when you're Woody Aragon, it works when you're Danny D. Ortiz, but the problem is every Spanish magician is doing exactly the same style, and it's got to a point where it's just a little bit samey. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but I do you know what? I don't think it's an issue with the Spanish style. I just think it's an overall issue which applies to all magic and any performance art, is that to some people, it comes naturally to have that style because it fits their personality, their persona. Like, they are chaotic. They can be like a scatterbrain and clumsy. You know, I'm saying that in air quotes. Some people aren't. And when you try to pretend to be like that, force your character to be like that, it doesn't work. Because it's such a unique style, then, you have to be that sort of way inclined as you move and speak. That if you try to fake it, it very quickly becomes apparent that it something's off. I talk about this a lot. I talk about this in my Blackpool lecture. I called it going into magician mode. For me, when you do, for my style, the type of magic that I choose to do, I like to be organic and seemingly off the cuff, as if like, oh, I've got nothing ready, but I'll do this. If I'm standing there and I'm just chatting, having fun, having a drink, and then someone says, "Show me a trick," and I suddenly go, "Okay, right now then, what I'd like you to do, please, sir, is pick a card." Or I go into this, like, I suddenly change my stance, my shoulders become like, I straighten my back up, and I go into this whole persona. Immediately, I become the gimmick, or I become suspicious. So right before I even have the deck or whatever I'm going to use as my tool, right before I begin, my audience is suspicious of me because I'm changing who I am, right? Oh, I'm changing my demeanor, I'm changing my posture, everything. So I call that going into magician mode. I think it's such a... But so many magicians start up, get caught, I say, like, flashing, in air quotes, before they even start performing, right? It's kind of like when a boxer will see someone have a chink in their armor and they say they win before they start the fight. And I think the same can be said, and I feel the same can be said about people that have a false persona in general. So maybe that's their entire persona they're trying to portray before they even break into it. So they come on stage acting, or they come out like that, they're acting chaotic and they're not. But humans can smell it a mile off. It's why when you watch anybody, right, if you watch a news reader in a movie versus a news reader on the TV, like live, you can always tell when one's acting. It's like the most basic thing to do. Not basic, I don't mean that's any disservice, but to stand there and deliver a script live versus like one that's pretending to be live, even if they feed them the lines live there to try and make it seem more thing. Yeah, or any acting. I say this a lot. Magicians are the worst actors in the world, and we should be the best. We should try to be the best actors in the world, because we shouldn't even... In acting, it's okay to know that somebody's acting. You're like, oh, I'm going to see the theatre show. I'm watching a movie. It's okay. Magicians, if it depended on your style, the audience shouldn't know that you're acting. And because the majority of magicians are such terrible actors, and I read this somewhere, but like, you know, more magicians should actually study acting. Then when they try to be someone that they're not, it doesn't work for them 10 times more than just seeing a bad actor in a film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. 100%.
So I don't think there's anything wrong with the Spanish style, because when you watch Deortes do it, when you watch Woody do it, when you watch, you know, anyone, Hector Mancha, even to an extent and stuff, and Tamariz, you don't feel uncomfortable watching them.
No.
You know, you when you watch like the Jan Frisch, even though he's not Spanish, but that chaotic, sloppy style of, yeah. of who's like Cardini, of things happening around him, to him, it works. You don't feel uncomfortable at all. But yeah, you watch some of them, you're like, oh, fucking hell. And it's, but it just appeals to, you know, anyone that's, that does a style that they don't suit.
Very good. Talking about style, by the way, I think we can all agree that Jeff McBride is a bit weird. He's one of the greatest card manipulators of all time. He's fantastic. But you meet him, he's very larger than life. He's flamboyant. He's a bit crazy. He's very in your face. He's like magic 24/7. He wears funny hats and he's just on date. He's just a bit nuts. And that's right. Part of his persona and his character. Ryland's obsessed at the moment with manipulation and wanting to learn every type of manipulation. So he got himself the Jeff McBride card manipulation L&L set, 3 volumes, where Jeff teaches everything from perfect productions to back palming and everything. And he's just constantly trying to learn all of that. Watching Jeff back on those DVDs when he was a lot younger, he's not that character. Like, he comes across as like just your average kid that you'd meet at a magic convention. And he's just normal. He's just proper, not Jeff McBride. And it's kind of weird because I remember thinking back and thinking to like when those DVDs came out and thinking, oh, he was always like he is now. But his persona on those DVDs is nothing like it is now. He's very, yeah, he's very kind of, I don't want to say introverted because that's not the case, but he's very, you know,
concise,
different. Yeah, very not Jeff McBride-ish. Still got the skill, still got the talent, still got the ability, still doing stuff with cards that almost nobody else in the world could do. But yeah, it's just weird that I've always considered his style to be a style he's had right from the very beginning. But I think it's something that he's developed over time. Just a
new observation. It's also, yeah, but it also, it could just be like that. That's his like game mode, you know, like that. You don't seem to change from being on stage to chatting casually, unless you're just a little bit like relaxed. But you don't change between any performance that you do. But then there's some magicians that, sometimes there's no other option. Like a Darren Brown, for example. I've spent a little bit of time with Darren in the past, and he's just quite a chill guy. And then suddenly on stage, I almost like think he's like the Freddie Mercury of mentalism. You know what I mean? He just like commands it. You can't take your eyes off him. But kind of, in the no offense way, quite an assuming guy to chat to, you know, in a normal situation. Yeah. I suppose it's kind of like Jeff McBride style. He could, even though maybe now he's like that, I don't know, but it's just like being on that on mode.
Yeah, I mean, all I do when I go on stage, and you've seen me on stage, all I do is I just turn the volume up on them. I'm just
literally it. Yeah,
I'm still me. I'm a little bit more annoying. I just turn the volume up. I'm
volume and sweat go.
Yeah, exactly. It's still the same person. I think that's important about character. I think that when you're performing, I think that, mind you, you know, there's cases to say that that's not like, look at Tom Crosby, the performing nerd. That works for him because he is a nerd in real life. He just genuinely is. So that he made that his persona, and it freaking works for him. The weird one is John Vanderput and Piff the Magic.
I was just thinking Piff because his older stuff, he's very much like a generic close-up magician.
He is, and I've seen him lecture as John Vanderput, and he was very quiet and unassuming, and I've competed against him in competitions, and he's been very different. It's almost like putting on that dragon suit gives him superpowers.
Yeah.
And who is not normally.
There's another person, not a magician. I'm trying to think who it is. But as soon as they put on like whatever it is their attire is for the character, I don't know. Probably quite a lot of people actually.
Ryland's like that. Like he wears those polo shirts with Ryland the Kid Magician on it. You see him out when he's not on stage. you go up to him and you go, hi, and, you know, unless he's trying to throw tomato sauce on you, he's very shy and very, but you know, you see him on stage and he walks out in front of 5,500 people and just switches it on. I think a lot of performers are like that, I guess, but I've never seen it to the extent that you see it with Pip.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great, though. It's, the thing is, it works for him.
It really does.
And when it works, I think when I think of Piff, I don't think of the effects that are brilliant that he performs. I think of him.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's such a good character, so funny, so easy on stage. And when it works, that's what it is, right? It's just easy and you like them and you don't really care what they do. There's some magicians, like close-up magicians I can think of like that, where their tricks are... Like, you know, I'm not naming names, but their tricks don't fool you, for example. Maybe they performed really well, but nothing really blows you away. But you absolutely fucking love watching them because their persona works for them. I'll give you a good example. I hope no one gets fed of this, but like the majority of David Blaine's close-up walk-around material, right? Ambitious card, two-card Monty, watch steals. That type of stuff we're all very, very familiar with. I mean, most of us copied it, to be honest. You know what I mean? But his persona is very unique to him, but it works for him because I think he is quite like that, you know, a bit eccentric, also fairly subdued and quiet at times, but then can have outbursts. But when other people try and copy it, you know, you see the magicians that try to be like Blaine or the people that try to be like Dynamo, it doesn't work. But when it works, you get catapulted.
You tend to find that with mentalism, they are the same on stage as they are off stage. I can't think of many mentalists that change it around much. Derren Brown is an example, but you look at Pete Turner, Peach just Pete. You meet him in a performing situation, you beat him off stage, he's exactly the same. Same with Michael Murray, same with Louis Lavelle, same with Rich Relish. A lot of the really good mentalists. They seem to be the same on stage as they are off stage. There's not really that much of a discernible difference.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, maybe it's because a lot more of the craft is spent on the personality, honing the personality, and I suppose that it bleeds over into your day-to-day life. I think I'm just making wild assumptions here. Okay. But with close-up magic, I suppose that a lot of the talking is done with your hands, and that's a bit more unnatural to translate over.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly.
I think you might be right. It's interesting, though. It's a really interesting subject.
Yeah, I've thought about character and act, or at least acting, or go. I call it magician mode. Thought about it a fair extent, because I think it's what's the phrase? Like, do you know what? I suppose a lot of this comes from doing so much work on video, but it's really hard to be yourself on camera. Or it's for some reason, I don't find it hard now, but I absolutely wasn't comfortable doing it for a long time. And people always like reach out and ask for like to say, how the fuck do you talk to a camera? Well, I looked at my video I put up yesterday, and I was like, I'm a bit too presentery on that video. It's very rarely when I'm just like chatting as I would in this podcast, you know. And it's so funny to say that you have to spend time practicing to not do anything. It's kind of magic in a nutshell, right? Practice to try and show that you have no ability in a way, or you hide your ability. And it's not so much an ability, but when you're on camera, and I think for the type of magic that I choose, when you perform, it's hard to not show anything different or be anything different as to what you are. Anyway, come back next week for more pointless magic discussion.
This is what people tune in for, that and talk about Peter Nardi's love spot.
Tune in for the drama.
Yeah, well, they're not getting any drama this week. They're getting thought discussions about character, which is kind of weird for us. Actually, I will give a shout out to Richard Young and his podcast, because obviously, you know, he was the OG when it came to the podcast with the magician.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And he's back. He's bought out the Magicians Podcast Network. They're doing three. It's a paid podcast.
I was at the launch. Well, it was the Darren Brown book launch, and they also did the first recording, I think, that he went back with Darren, the Darren interview at the Magic Circle. Fucking yeah. Tremendous.
Well, I'm telling you, his new podcast, the Magicians podcast, what's it called? Magicians Podcast Network or something. They do three shows and a week. Really, really good. Really good. I've become a big fan.
We could probably take a million tips from them, because this is by far the worst podcast in Magic, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, it's a great. I'm not even going to fucking disagree with you. But their podcast,
we don't even use fucking microphones.
No, we used to.
Mine broke. Actually, I keep trying to get mine to work.
I got mine. I've lost it somewhere.
I told you, I sent you 2 years ago, however the fuck long ago it was, buy this microphone. You bought it off Amazon. It took about 3 weeks for you to click buy now. It finally came to your house. You used it once and then fucked it off.
I need to find it. It's around somewhere. But yeah, look, the podcast is great. And Alan Hudson and Richard Young, that co-host one of the three shows a week, are fucking hilarious together.
Yeah, I've seen Alan Hudson on Fool Us, and I've seen Richard Young at the Magic Circle. They've just got, they've got it. Whatever it is, they've got it in spades.
They have.
So I do need to listen to it, actually. This is the type of thing. My only problem is, like, I would have listened to this, to their podcast. I would have binged them going up to Newcastle. But I don't get time, because I'll be chatting, probably jamming. But I'm going to actually download some now. Where can I find it? On Spotify?
Yeah. You can just pay about £10 a month. It's really good. It's well worth doing.
Oh, subscription based, is it?
Yeah. You just pay every month.
Is it the Magicians Network?
Yep, that's the one.
No.
And just Alex McAleer's on there, and he does a great job, and there's some great stuff. But my favourite is Alan and Richard together. They're brilliant. I just want to give everyone a shout out and tell everyone to try it, because it's really good. But we're talking about conventions a lot recently. Yeah.
Yes.
Let me tell you this. There's a 1 day convention happening in 2 weeks time. And I want you to listen to this lineup. Two star lectures, Nick Einhorn and Tobias Dostal.
What?
Interview with magician Nick Mohammed, who's a magician and an Emmy-nominated actor. Dealer Hall, Stage Magician of the Year competition, Close-Up Magician of the Year competition, and a gala show. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, my camera cut out.
Okay. And a gala show consisting of Tobias Dostal, Billy Kidd, Yolin Lee, Florian Brooks, Nick Mohammed, Jake Allen, Nick Einhorn, and finally headlined by Young and Strange.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Where is this?
This is a convention that no one can go to. Because it is the Young Magicians Club annual convention. And I wanted to tell you what the fucking lineup was, so you can see how good the YMC is doing now, because they are incredible. They are blowing it out of the water. Like, I'm so impressed. So impressed. Absolutely so impressed.
Are you going, because you can take Rylan?
Well, Ryland's in the close-up competition and in the stage competition, so I have to be there with him. So yes, I'm going, and I'm going to get to see everything, including the lectures, hopefully, and the competition. But yeah, I'm going. But I just wanted people to know, you know, because a lot of people don't talk about the YMC. The kids at the YMC are amazing. I got to tell you, generally as a rule, the kids in Magic these days are more mature than the adults. Like.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of drama going on in this community for the last few weeks about a million different things. And there's a few people who we're not going to talk about that I feel have acted very, very immaturely and calling people out and throwing down. Oh, it's just bullshit.
Prayer circles.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something I've done in the past. But, you know, Ryland's in this chat group with some other kid magicians in Magic and on Instagram, and they have this little group. And Ryland very rarely lets me look in it because it's his thing. He's in it under supervision, so I don't get to see what they talk about an awful lot. But he told me the other day they were talking about, you know, they were just all chatting back and forth about like super creative stuff, like making toppings appear on pizza by magic, and oh, how would that be an amazing trick and stuff like that. And they're all just so much more mature than the adults. It's insane. So I want to give shout out to all of the kids in Magic, especially the ones you haven't heard of. Go follow Nia. I think her name's Nia Evans. I think it might be Nia Evans, I think. Here's a couple of people you should follow that are really good.
Rafferty Cooper is one of my favorite.
Rafferty Cooper. Go and follow Nia Evans Magic. All of these guys are on Instagram. Go follow Magic Alon. Go follow.
I love Magic Alon.
Yeah, Joseph is great. One of the best cube guys I've ever seen. So good, like so good.
Eva, do you want to find out about the younger guys and girls? Is that they've still got that? We all have it, but that fire in their belly is burning bright, and they're so positive.
Yeah,
they are so positive. They seem so supportive. I believe they are so supportive of one another.
Each other. Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Henry Berry.
You know Henry, who creates card gimmicks and shows them you every time?
I fucking love Henry.
Absolutely. He's got his first trick coming out next month with Alakazam.
I know. I helped him with it. Like a boom routine.
Boom. That's so good.
Is he 16? 16? Is it or 14?
Like 14 or 15, yeah.
Unbelievable. The kid is going places. But yeah, it's just so nice to see. Honestly, I'd rather spend time on, without the police knocking on my door, but I'd rather spend time on forums chatting to the younger generation who are just so kind and passionate and just have their priorities in the right places, as opposed to a vocal minority of others in the community.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Way more mature. I think we need to recognize that. But with that in mind, we are now 50 minutes into this podcast, and it's about time that we talk about the thing that everybody is going to want us to talk about, that we promised we'd talk about this week. And you and I have a very interesting take on it, which is we're going to look at new products. And we're going to start by talking about the Demi Deck.
Yeah! Finally!
This podcast goes out, the trailer will have dropped. It's already...
The trailer's already out.
Well, no, it's not officially out. It's in the...
Demi Deck launch group.
The Demi Deck launch group, but a lot of people aren't on Facebook because they're, you know, scared or whatever. But it's out. You know,
The trailer was finished four years ago.
I didn't know whether I could talk about this or not. I would like to talk about, you've told me why it's taken so long to come to market. I would like you to tell people why, because I think it shows what a good company Murphys are, you know.
I tell you what, I won't talk about it because it wasn't my project to work on. So,
okay, but suffice to say, it could have come out a lot earlier, but Murphys held back to make it a better product.
Yes,
when they didn't need to, you know, they made it a better product. Let's just say that.
Yeah, do you know what? It was even the trailer was shown to me before I even joined at Murphy's. I was asked to give a quote on it because I was so excited. So we've all known about this. I mean, most people know affiliation with Angelo.
I knew about Angelo showed me the trailer to this before I'd even met you.
Yeah.
That's how long this has been in the works. The finished trailer was shown to me by Angelo before I interviewed you for Magic TV. Yeah. And he said to me at the time, I don't know when it's coming out, but I'm excited for people to see it.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, don't forget a big part of that as well was that was COVID was then. We got COVID in between that. So an absolute logistical nightmare because they have to be... They are made specifically, so they are... It's not just spoiler alert. It's not just a leather box that goes around your cards with a hinge on it. There is a lot of stuff going on. You've got one in your hands.
Indeed, I love that.
But yeah, so yeah, so obviously, like, just a long time coming. But let's talk about the effect. Let's talk about how good it is. I'll tell you this, and this sounds like this is going to be the thing. I think the biggest question on everyone's lips is going to be angles, and you kind of need to see it in real life to. It's a bit. Whatever the angles you, whatever you think the angles are, my nose is so blocked with this cold. Whatever you think the angles are, I'd say it's around 10 to 15 degrees more every way. So if you if you think you can only get away with being looking like from this way or this way, you could actually go like a surprising fair amount more, because obviously it's not 360, right? It's not real magic, spoiler alert. There are angle conditions to it, but I was just shocked at just how wide the scope is.
Well, I'll tell you something. I don't think there's a magician in the world that has performed this in a real gigging situation more than me. Because Angelo gave me one of these about 4 months ago. And Angelo has one, obviously, but he doesn't perform. He doesn't gig. And obviously, Javier learnt it for the trailer and everything and live performances. But Javs, although performs, he's busy working at Murphy's. I don't think anyone else has had one of these really for any length of time. And I've been taking it to every single gig for the last 4 months. So I know this product inside out, upside down, back to front and left way sideways. And I've performed it walk around. I've performed it in banquet. I've performed it on stage. I've performed it everywhere. Ryland has filmed a video for social media. This thing is practical. The angles, which is the thing that everyone's going to be concerned about, I don't think the angles are anywhere. I think that they're on the same level as three fly, which is, if you know, that's what I said to somebody the other day. Like, if you think about three fly, you can have issues with people from the side, but if you know that they're coming from the side, you take a step back. And then you covered the angle.
Yeah, always take a step back. Also, I think Angelo mentioned this himself. It's the right side of you is much stronger than the left side. So it would be akin to anyone that uses like a Tenkai palm. As in, you could be seen from the front and you're really good from the right side. So when you're going to perform it, just stands. If you are ultra worried about this, because it is better angle. It is great angles from the front. Better than Tenkai. Just turn your body ever so slightly, which kind of plays into the illusion anyway. I have it. I think I have it in my suitcase from Miami. I haven't performed it yet, but I intend on performing it to Kaylee in about half an hour's time. Because she's going to get back from the gym. And we have like a window of like 15 minutes before she has to get in the shower and go pick the baby up. So I'm going to try and set up. I am going to think about the angles for filming, because the one thing I can't get twice is her reaction. So I need a camera pointed at her face, but I also don't want a camera to see behind the scenes. You know what I mean? So I've got to figure out that. But in terms of a live performance, I'm literally less than zero. Like, I'm overconfident. But maybe not. That's not right. I have literally zero qualms with my angles. I know that this thing works beautifully with a group of people in front of me.
Yep.
You know? I seen Javier perform it to his mother when we were in Miami. And it blew her. Actually, I have a fucking video. You talk for a second and I'll find the video. You could hear it.
It's a hot product. I think it's a contender for Trick of the Year, but I've been saying that for the last 4 years, not knowing when it's coming out. I think that it's a serious contender for Trick of the Year. I think it's an incredible trick. And I think that one thing about it that I love is it doesn't take up any pocket space. You know, you have your case, you just put whatever deck of cards in there that you want to use, and they're in there, and you just carry the cards around like this. It's actually a really nice card holder. And if you don't want to do the trick, you just tip the cards out and it looks just like a normal card holder. But if you want to go into it, you can immediately go into it. And on the tutorial, and they don't mention this on the trailer at all, on the tutorial, there is a really, really sick handling by David Regal, which is my favorite handling on the whole project. And the whole idea of Regal's handling is he has a deck of cards shuffled. He has a card picked. and lost into the pack, and they genuinely shuffle it into the pack, and it's lost. And then he takes the cards, puts them back into the box, does the move, and at that point, then you know he has the he does the move, and when he opens up to show that it's in two halves, two half cards fall out, and the two half cards that fall out are actually the card that they picked. So it's like that he found the card by cutting the cards in half, and then he puts them back together. And as soon as they go back together, bada boom, bada bing, the deck's back to normal, and he goes into whatever routine he wants to go into. And while I was saying that, Lloyd just showed me the video of Javier's mom.
Yeah, but you can all hear it if you want to. I mean, it's in Spanish, so... Oh, well, the video just... Okay, let me just fast forward a bit. It's completely pointless because it's in Spanish, but... You skip it forward, you hear a reaction. Da, da, da. It's him tipping the deck into her hands. It's a bit pointless showing that, but it was just great to see. I know it's his mum, but she's really critical with his magic. She would tell him if he ever flashed or actually, she did. I got a video of him doing like card to pocket, and she was like, you palmed that. But yeah, but she fucking loved that trick. It wasn't for social media or anything. We just filmed it, you know, hanging out.
That's great.
It's good. It's so good. It's so good. And yeah, I'm excited to give it a go on Kaylee. I think she's going to love it because it's so different. In fact, I want to go fucking get out of my suitcase and practice a little bit now. But yes, so it's been a long, long time coming. I think it's like, it kind of, it feels to me kind of like a, it's like a, like Angelo's best work all combined into one. It's his like brilliant mind, his creative principles, his mechanical engineering type brain with card magic infused into it. It's kind of like the greatest, I don't know, greatest hits in one trick. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just brilliant. And it's typical Angelo genius level. I can't see anybody else coming up with something like this.
The cool thing is, unless you do the twisted card effect, where you turn one around, you can use any deck.
Yeah.
Let's use any deck.
You're good to go anytime, anywhere.
So I think, but I don't think we need to talk too much. Well, we don't need to talk about anything, but the trailer is pretty much.
God forbid that people are saying that we're going to hype it up. This hasn't been hyped up at all. It's literally just dropped. They could have been hyping it up for 4 years because they've had the trailer in place.
Well, what I said, when it was all about the marketing comparison to decks, that the thing with an index, and especially to the market as well, a lot of people, it's so hard to advertise an index because either a lot of people haven't really considered one before, so you've got to try and show them what can be done with it. Some people are just not familiar with them, right? Because they just, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like a tool, an extra tool that you don't necessarily need if you haven't thought about it. And yeah, so it's not something that you just, I don't know. It's more of a thing that you want to highlight how good it can be, and give people that moment of, oh yeah, I didn't realize what you could do with that. Okay, now I want it. Whereas a trick like this, which is a visual trick, a one trick thing, the advertising is the trailer. So there doesn't need to be any build up to something like this because you see it and you know immediately if you want it or not.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And also, like, the difference with Dex was it was the majority of the, I wouldn't, wait, I don't know, it's hard to say hype, but it was a project that I was sharing through the creative process live. So as we were making updates and advancements, I was talking about it up to my followers because I was excited. So I think we had like one teaser trailer and then the trailer dropped. You know, and there was like an element of advertising, but the majority of the hype just came from me being a fucking excited puppy.
There's nothing wrong with hype at all. That's what magic... I love getting hyped up with tricks. I mean, we talked about this last week. We're not going to talk about it again, but I fucking love being hyped up. I just love it. I love that moment where a new trick comes out that I just want. And I really want it really, really badly.
Well, it's like Steve Faulkner said it the other day. He said that he, like, if he's, you know, when it comes to, like, horror movies and things, like, he loves the excitement and the hype of things coming. Because that's what is passion. I'm the same. I love it. I love anything, whether it's, I just like, magic can be so samey. And when you have such a, like a toxic community or element to the community, it can, sometimes it could just be so monotonous, you know? I love it. If there's a new show coming up, a new Darren Brown special, they hype it like fuck on, like crazy coming up on TV. Whether that special is his best work or not, I just like the excitement about it. Whether the Blame Tour is coming to the UK or when there's going to be the next FISM or the Blackpool convention coming up and they hype it the whole year. Yeah, I love it. It's just an event. You know, it's something happening.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And talking about something else that's come out recently that I absolutely fucking love, that I think is another contender for Trick of the Year, is Mini Book Pro by Trick Trick Boom.
Oh, Mini Book Pro is absolutely awesome. Absolutely fucking awesome. I think everyone knows what it is, right? Can you explain?
Mini Book Pro. So Mini Book Pro is by Noel Quarter and Roddy McGee, their new production company, Trick Trick Boom. I actually interviewed them about their new production company a couple of weeks ago. This is their launch item. If you haven't seen it, go check out the trailer. Basically, what happens in this particular trick is that you start off by asking the you talk about a new piece of Apple tech, and you ask somebody to go onto their phone and go onto the website, and they see this laptop there. You know, it's a website designed to sell this new laptop. It's spinning round, blah 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 blah, and then you literally just pluck it out of their phone. That's right, their phone. And once you have, there's no way they're going to be able to recreate how that trick works. And it's a mini laptop. It's a tiny laptop that sits in your palm. You then have somebody pick a card, they sign a card, the card's lost in the pack, and you tell them the laptop's going to help work out where the card is using its really seriously powerful computing power. They put the name of the card into the laptop, and you know, and then you look at the screen and it tells you, for example, you just say, okay, it's going to tell you to shuffle for 3 seconds and then deal to the 10th card, whatever that may be. So then you do that, and it's not the card, classic magician in trouble. And you go, well, obviously the laptop's broken. And they get the laptop they've been holding onto, they look back at it. And now that laptop is the same looking laptop, but it's a folded up card, but looks like the laptop that they were holding a second ago. And when they undo that that card, when they unfold that card, now the card is their signed card. I mean, it's one of those absolute what the actual fuck moments. That's what it is. You see it and you're like, I kind of like think of it as a sixth sense type moment, you know, like the whole, I did not fucking see that coming. And I love those moments in magic. I really do. They're few and far between, unfortunately, where just everything feels like it's changed and you thought you knew where the trick was going. And then it's not. And it reminds me a little of, and I mentioned this to you, I mentioned this to Noel and Liam, it reminds me a little bit of Cognito in that moment where you just don't see it coming. You know, you just think that it's going in one direction and you're staring at something, and it's only when it's pointed out to you that you go, oh, fuck. Oh, yeah. Wow. And you know, it's kind of got its roots in Lit by, you know, is it Dan House that did Lit? And
Dan White.
Dan White, sorry.
Was it Dan White and Dan House?
I don't know. One of the Dans. Theory 11. Reminds me a little bit of Look Sharp by Wayne Goodman, but without this, with a signature.
Absolutely.
It's just really, really powerful shit. It's just an incredible. And again, I've had this for a while. I was aware of this for about 3 or 4 months ago. Me and Noel have met up a few times, actually longer than that. I think I first saw it at Black in the session
convention.
And I've met up with Noel for a couple of drinks since then, and talked to him back and forth about the product, and now it's seen the light of day. It's one of those tricks that workers are going to love. It's one of those tricks that hobbyists are going to love. It's going to look great on social media. I said to Noel and Roddy, I said, this is genuinely what I think. In the next 12 months, I would be shocked if somebody did not take that Mini Book Pro and do it on a Got Talent performance, because it has got everything that you need for a perfect Got Talent performance. It's, you know, it's got the ability to go up to the judges' desk and you know, like kind of do something at their desk. It's got the moment where you can borrow their phone and have you know have you know something coming out. It's just got everything. It's got absolutely everything that you need for a Got Talent performance. I'm calling it right now. It's going to be performed on a Got Talent in the next 12 months, guaranteed.
Yeah, 100%. Because you know you're just going to get fucking rave reactions from it.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, it's just got everything. It's a fucking fantastic effect. And yeah, you're right. We say Demi Deck is up for Trick of the Year, for sure. But then you have something like this, which is... Demi Deck is ultra creative, where MiniBook Pro is super duper creative as well, but it's also got the factor, or it has, I mean, oh, the two different things are two different effects. Demi Deck is almost like that, how the fuck is my mind working? And then this has that like nuclear bomb of, what the fuck, my world's upside down. Both different reactions completely, very hard to choose. If you did both of them in your set, you'd be a very good magician, I think. You know, it was a very strong choice of trick.
Absolutely, and they could go together. You know, they could go together very easily.
Yeah, you could open with Demi Deck and then begin the effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, do you know what's funny, actually? You could, because Demi Deck is like a miniature sword and half illusion.
Yeah.
You could say that I first watched the sword and half on my... You know, I don't fucking know, but there's a connection there between miniaturizing a stage illusion and miniaturizing a laptop.
Yes, there is, yes.
You know, everything's miniature. You could even theme a sort of act around. You could... finish, you know, you could do a shrinking Sharpie effect, do an effect where the deck shrinks to a mini deck and, you know, mini but pro. So it could all tie in together. You could have quite a fun little set list there. I can see the cogs ticking over. Craig's brain has literally just gone into, I have 300 ideas of how to turn this into tiny little objects. And now I'm going to be called the downsize me magician.
Absolutely. Fuck yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Magician.
Need to check to see if there's a website available right now.
Yeah. Here's something I'll never understand is why do magicians give themselves the titles of like the unique magician, the special magician, the funny entertainer magician? What's that all about?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Do you have a moniker like that?
For a while. When I left the magic community and I got kicked out by the magic circle.
The second time.
But that's the time that like I left. Like the whole red thing happened at the same time. We had the team building thing happen. We had the Jeff McBride, Wayne Dobson thing happened. I got kicked out by the magic circle. I was fucking hated at that point. Like everyone hated me. I decided to just fucking own it. And I made my... for me personally, I gave my strapline as the bad boy of magic.
That's cool.
I just thought if I may as well fucking embrace this. Yeah. So don't really do that anymore. But I used to. But no, I don't. I remember seeing a website many, many years ago for a magician, a kids entertainer from Brazil, I think it was, or something. And he was calling himself Pedro File.
No.
He's not around anymore. Don't know why. But genuinely, I was researching into people's websites and I found his website, Pedrophile.
Blimey.
I remember it was like back in the early 2000s. You know, it was... yeah, I just thought that was weird. But yeah, magicians do tend to do that. They do. I want to talk about another product, Lloyd.
Yes.
We've talked about a couple of really good ones. I want to know your opinion on the card trick that Vanishing Ink are selling for like 500 quid.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so for people, I've got very.
Well, I don't know why I laugh. I have no idea why I laugh. Well,
I've got very specific thoughts on this. So for those of you that don't know, Vanishing Ink, owned by Joshua Jay and Andy Gladwin, who are all about giving back to magic and nothing about money. That's not their thing. They don't care about money. It's not a factor, really. It's all about giving back to magic. Anyway, they have just brought out a trick called the World's Greatest Card Trick. £435, $500. And it's by Hector Mancha. Now, I've never seen Hector Mancha before, but apparently he's a really great magician and he's won lots of awards, which is fantastic.
He's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, phenomenal. I fully believe he is. Fully believe he is. I'm going to give people a reference point and then you can tell me exactly what you think, because we've not talked about this before. So the whole idea is Hector Mancha fooled Penn and Teller with a particular trick.
He's a FISM winner, in a way.
No, I'm not dissing the guy. Okay. This is not about me dissing Hector Mancha. He, I've heard very good things about him. Never really seen him at all. But everyone I've spoken to says that he's a fantastic performer, FISM winner, one of the most creative magicians in the world, blah, 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 blah. Great, fantastic. So he fooled this, Penn and Teller with this card trick, which in many ways is the holy grail of card tricks, which is I'm going to put a card over here in this glass. I'm going to have somebody name a card. When they name a card, I'm going to show the card in the glass to them, because you're getting somebody to call their friend on a FaceTime. So you show the card to the friend on FaceTime, and then you turn it round and it matches, and there's no force. So in many ways, it's the holy grail of card magic. You know, for years, magicians have said, wouldn't it be amazing to put a card down on the table, have someone name a card, and that's the card. And so what Vanishing Ink have done is they're selling this for $500. But it's not a physical product. You're learning how the trick works. You don't need a gimmick or anything. There's two ways, apparently, that you can do it.
It's a card routine.
Yeah, it's a card routine. It's a card trick, right? So you don't need a physical product with it. So you're getting online instruction. And how it works is it's you're not getting a download. You're not getting a pre-made video or anything. You get one-on-one tuition with Hector himself, who will talk you through every aspect of the trick and not come off the call with you until he knows that you can do it like he can. So that's what you get. I don't know if you get a recording of that or not. I'm not too sure. And the ad copy says on there, how much would you pay for the perfect trick? And it's a one-of-a-kind opportunity. And it's going to be reserved for those who get the most value out of it, professional performers. And so instead of traditional instructions, you're going to get a Zoom call with Hector, and the training will not end until you can perform the routine. And there's a private Facebook group for people that have bought it as well. Doesn't need any gimmicks, blah, 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 blah. So that's what Vanishing Ink have done. And it's causing a debate within the magic community. There's people that are saying, there's two schools of thought on this. The one school of thought is $500 for a card trick. Are you fucking kidding me? That is the most insane price for a card trick. And it's also very dangerous, because if this is the model that we're going to be using moving forward, that like the only people that can buy a trick are pros. Why is it exclusively for them? Where do we draw the line? You know, that trick that you showed me before we started, that's a really fucking cool card trick. You know, you could sell that for $500. When will it stop? If this becomes a successful business model and becomes more profitable for the magic company than doing it through a traditional release or traditional download system, will this become the norm? And if that's the case, that massively spikes prices. Yeah. The other school of thought are people, you know, Rory Adams has weighed in on Magicians Only, and he said, hey, you know, it makes me laugh that magicians that are moaning about $500 for a price tag of a trick, when, you know, successful magicians that, you know, that turn over, you know, £500,000 a year, £1 million a year, will pay consultants way more than that to come up for tricks for their show. And, you know, sometimes if you want to be successful, you have to pay more in order to get that exclusive trick. And, you know, you've got people, and I've said this right from the very beginning, you know, I was the staunch defender of Scott Alexander's prices. You know, people moaned about Scott's stuff. You know, he's charging $1,000 for a bucket and a ceramic bubble. Are you nuts? And I'm like, well, as a creator, he can charge what he wants. You're getting the routine, you're getting live performances, you're getting Scott's thoughts on it, you're getting it, you know. So you've got people that are defending it and saying, yeah, this is the way to go, and you've got people that are saying this is absolutely insane. And then the people that are saying that's insane, I'll say one more thing and then I'll throw it over to you, Lloyd. The people that are saying it's insane, one of the reasons that a lot of people are not on board with this is because of the particular trick. And there's three reasons for that. Yeah, the first reason people are saying it is because in essence, from a layman's point of view, you could achieve exactly the same thing with an invisible deck.
And you can achieve it with
or with an
a index, superior index. Method.
With decks and with the scissor switch.
No, not even in an index. You carry on. So I don't think it's about an index.
Okay. So some people are saying you could achieve it with an invisible deck or any other method. The second thing that people are saying is it's not that great a trick anyway, and Hector's done a lot better. So why is this the thing he's decided to teach? To which people are saying, somebody else came on and said, I'd pay $500 to have one-on-one lessons with Hector with a FISM winner. And then somebody else is saying, yeah, but you're only getting one-on-one lessons on this trick. It's not like he's sitting down and teaching you how to design a FISM act or talking about all of his other material. This conversation is going to be just specifically about this one trick. That's what you've bought. Once you understand how this trick works, that's it. End of conversation. You know, and other people are saying, well, the foolish thing, it was fairly obvious how it worked. And I don't understand how Penn and Teller were fooled, because it's obvious where the card is, you know, and what happens. And there's a cut that takes place in Foolus where the camera pans away just at the moment where you would see what's going on. And, you know, in order to charge this much money, I think you need to have full transparency about that. So that's what this podcast is all about, Lloyd. It's all about us talking about the things that everybody else in the community is talking about. And this is a hot topic. And yeah, I mean, I've laid the groundwork for you. I've got thoughts. I'd love to know your thoughts, first of all.
So many thoughts. First of all, this isn't the first time this has been done in a million years. Paul V. Hill had a trick called something, which was like $1,000 for a PDF, right? Or I don't know. It was released some format years and years and years ago. What was it called? So tricks, one-off card tricks, are not new for high prices. I also think that this is a stage piece, right? He did this on stage. It's a stage piece. If you're
The ad copy is saying that this is something that could be done close up.
But I mean, he performs it on stage and he's going to stage, I'd say. I can imagine it being done close up. A lot more stringent. You have to be a bit more tighter and everything, but I can see it's been done close up. But stage performers, as a rule, I don't do either, but I'd imagine they earn a chunk more than a walk around performer because ticket sales, more people in the audience, you know. Those stage performers, if they've chosen to do an illusion show, then they're going to be paying. I mean, how much do you pay for props? Like £20,000?
The last illusion that I bought was called the Squisher. I bought it about 5 months ago, and it was, I think, £4,000 plus VAT.
So, yeah, £4,000 plus VAT. It's going to give you maybe, I don't know, I would assume around 6 to 8 minutes of stage time.
It's a 4 minute, maybe 5 minute at the most.
4 to 5 minute act, part of your act. Happy to pay £5,000, right? One way in which I correlate that is if it's a stage, whatever piece it is, if it's 5 minutes, like this is like I think the video was like 6 minutes-ish or something, right? And you have a 20 minute act, that's 25% of your act or over. And you're going to be hopefully using that 50 times a year, so at least once a week, yeah? Mm-hmm. And you're going to make, if you're, you know, I would say a decent stage performer, at least, I don't know, 80K a year or something like that. I have no idea what they should be earning, but I wouldn't do it for anything less than that. This is really fuck all to pay in one respect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The other thing is, sorry, I was blowing my nose in between that. Then I was such a bad cold. So it's absolutely nothing to pay. But also, the people who are complaining about this are probably not the people that would be in these positions to perform this or mm-hmm. pay for this. I think, and that's not a disservice to them at all, is that sometimes that not every trick that gets advertised is advertised for every magician to buy. That's why that's why you learn it directly from Hector. Now that alone, a lesson with Hector Muncher, FISM winner, FISM fucking winner. If you've not seen his winning FISM act, that alone is incredible. I know consultants. Well, I know tons of consultants that their day rate is nothing less than £1,000 a day.
Like Rory, probably more.
Like Rory, yeah, £1,000 a day, no drama. And that's just to sit there with ideas. You never guarantee you're going to walk away with an idea you're going to use on a show for that price. Hell, I haven't charged those prices, so I'm being completely frank. So to go on there with a winner, FISM winner, have screen time with them, guarantee that you walk away with a trick that you can perform, that you will be able to perform as you go and do your act, which is going to take up over 25% potentially of your act on stage, it's nothing. It's absolutely fuck all. But those people that do those acts know this. They know that. I think the tension has grown from people seeing it as a trick that they would like to do at the pub or to friends.
Yeah.
And confused with that. And then sprinkled in with it, I don't, and this is a personal opinion, I don't think it's a great method to achieve this effect. And with that being said, I don't think it was the right trick to choose to launch this new initiative with Manager Luke. If this was like the fourth or fifth trick in a series of other fantastic tricks, and it's a good trick, but it's the thing is, there's a few golden crowns in magic, or there's a few diamonds in the, what's it, jewels in the crowns in magic. Certain tricks will always be loved and focused on a lot more, mainly being the any card, any number, total restored card, like the piece by piece one, triumph. But there's a few like jewels in the crown, which are like the most coveted effects that people are always striving to achieve. And one of them is the isolated card reveal. One card placed in a wine glass, name a card, turn it over, it's there. It's the dream trick. So when it comes out and someone is saying it's the world's greatest card trick, they put in the price tag that would reflect essentially something being the world's greatest card trick. And it's, to at least in my opinion, from the general consensus online, doesn't seem to be that, then people are going to say what they're saying online about it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a business decision. I don't think they're doing it this way to make money off it. I do think every company in Magic is there to make money.
There's no problem with that. I've always defended magic companies, you know, that because that is, at the end of the day, magic dealers are a business.
A business is not a dirty word, by the way.
It's not.
It's not a fucking dirty word.
I run a business. It's not. And most professional magicians will run a business. You know what's hilarious?
The only dirty words in business are when people are deceitful and lie and steal from people, you know?
You know what's hilarious? The same people that are saying that this is overpriced are probably the same people that run magic businesses and moan when there's another magician out there that's undercharged their fee, gone out cheaper and got the gig. You should be charging more. You should value your services as a magician. You shouldn't be charging cheap. Oh, but hang on, Vanishing Ink. Now they should be charging less.
It's probably not worth it really to them. If it's, say, it's 50-50, right? And it's a £435 trick or $500 trick, to keep it simple. They're making $250 per sale. There's only a finite amount of time that Hector's got. And if each call takes him 3 hours, and no doubt people are going to want to eke those calls out, that time out with him, they're probably only going to... Well, I mean, I would not like to assume, but I can't see them selling more than 30... unit, say, right? So what's that? 30 times 250, $7,500. Vanishing Ink make that in the morning, selling playing cards. No, it's true. Like big magic companies, you make that in the first few hours of a day. So I think the whole, again, I'm not trying to be negative at all here. I just mean, realistically, if they were to sell 30, it wouldn't even be worth an afternoon's morning's profit. If they were to sell 100 with all the controversies caused and all the work that would have to go into it for Hector, it's really, I don't know, it would be worth his time, but it wouldn't really be a drop in the ocean to vanish it. They're not doing this to make profit. I think what it is that Hector's really proud of the routine. It did fool Penn and Teller, and he only wants a certain amount of people doing it. If this became a staple piece on stage, then it kind of would diminish it. But also he wants to share it, and he does have bills to pay. It's okay to have something that you've created be monetized to an extent in any form.
I definitely agree with you on all of the points that you've made. So two questions that I have as a follow-up. The first question is, do you think that this is something that could become a business model? Will we see more of these from Vanishing Ink and other dealers? Because you are right, they make more than this, but it's kind of like the thing with this is, from Vanishing Ink's point of view, they don't have to do anything. Like, it's not like they have to invest beforehand by producing props, which can be a very heavy investment and a risk if the trick's
there's no physical work.
They literally just get an order and then just go, right, Hector, we'll arrange a call, do it.
It's the same as digital downloads, but there is something that it takes up, and it takes up valuable real estate when it comes to advertising space. And also, they knew, I'm sure they would have known going into this, there was going to be backlash. They're not stupid. They know the magic industry. So they knew that this was going to take up advertising space, which is valuable, because if you advertise something which doesn't sell, you lose money on those days. And if you did that, if you made the wrong advertising call once a month, every month of the year, you'd be down 12% at least on profits, for example.
Yeah.
Also, they knew that, like, people would call them greedy or say it's just for profit, but it's I'm 100% convinced they're not doing this purely for profit. Obviously, they're doing it for a profit at some capacity, but I don't think they're doing it for profit. I do actually see this in the rare occasion of being that this is just a routine that somebody's really proud of. They've put the proof is out there that it's full pen and teller, and they want to teach it in a certain way in a limited capacity, right? I just think it's not the best trick to do it with. This is not the trick that I would have personally chosen to run the initiative with.
Yeah. Okay.
But look at, like, Nate Staniforth's lottery effect. Like, that was £1,000 pop.
Yeah, it was, and people bought it.
Yeah. So, and there's certain, like, mentalism effect that £100, or there's like a mentalism app. Remember, I Unlock Your Mind was £400, I think it was, or £300.
Yeah.
Just one trick.
Well, look at something like, what do you call it? Prevision.
Prevision by Renee. Yeah, €1,000.
Yeah.
And it's one trick that takes up about the same amount of time as your show.
Yeah.
So I just think, I honestly think, I kind of like the initiative. Imagine who has an amazing routine, right, that everyone loves to see. I don't know who it would be, but imagine you've seen that and you're like, fuck, I would love to learn that. If they could teach me, holy shit. Imagine, like, Azzy Wynn teaching everyone his A-can for £500. You wouldn't hear a fucking murmur.
No, you wouldn't.
You'd still have the same type of people that had no intention of ever learning it, complaining. But you wouldn't hear a fucking murmur. I just think they really have chosen the wrong trick, or at least the wrong way to highlight it, because the performance wasn't.
It wasn't the best trick that I've never seen Hector before. And I'd never seen his Penn & Teller performance. And whenever all the fuss, I went to watch the Penn & Teller performance, and I was like, this guy's a world champion. This is not that great a trick. I didn't think it was the best trick at all. And I can think of a million.
It's a good trick. It's a good trick. It's got a smart method. I think, obviously, with Penn & Teller burning him at the time of doing it, it added a bit to it. I don't think it was shot correctly. Obviously, like, there was an edit in the trailer, like people are talking about. I think if I were them, I probably would have tried to showcase how good it can look when it's performed at its best. So maybe reshoot the performance and then just show clips of the P&T footage.
Yeah.
You know? Because almost any trick could look incredible on its best day. But also, an incredible trick could look terrible on its worst day too. And I think they've chosen, I think it's just a little bit of a unfortunate combo of bad video performance and not the... The thing is, if you pay $500 for a trick, you want a trick that, I don't know, could come under less scrutiny.
So here's a question. Let's say somebody buys it. Ethically, where are we with future creations? And what I mean by that is it's kind of accepted within the industry that you improve on what's come before. So like, if you, you know, you'll see people that will be performing something and they'll go, now this is based off so-and-so's routine that he published in so-and-so. And you don't need to have bought so-and-so's routine in order to learn the routine that you're learning out of this book or this download or this product. You're just being told what the credit was, where the initial source of inspiration was, or where the move came from, or where the starting point was to improve it. As this is so exclusive, are we going to see people like, is it, what happens if somebody buys this and then they make an improvement to it that takes it in a different direction and in their opinion makes it a better trick, an even better trick? The starting point was this world's best card trick, but they've kind of moved in a different direction, gone in a slightly different direction. But in order to teach that, they have to teach an element of what's happening here. Ethically, are they allowed to do so? Or is it because it was a personal lesson you can't?
Murky. I mean, always, if you have intention of it, you should at least reach out to the person that gives you the bulk of the inspiration to explain where you are. I mean, that's just kind of the norm. But it depends on, like, for example, two things. On my Patreon, I taught the other day a card in glass effect, because Hector didn't come up with the card in glass concept. It's just an isolated card trick, whether it's in a glass or somewhere else. So I seen Hector's thing and I was watching the snooker and I was like, well, as you do as a magician, especially if you create stuff, you think, oh, I would do it this way. Oh, I wouldn't do it that way. And I had an idea and I tested it. I was like, fuck, that looks really good. That looks way cleaner. Doesn't use the phone or anything like that. So I tried it and I quickly taught it to my Patreon, completely different method. And it's up there. I don't feel like, I know I didn't have to ask for permission because it's the plot that I was exploring, right? In my own way. And I had a very, very different method. I think it looks a bit cleaner. And so that's there for him to learn. But I guess one interesting question that I've seen, also me and Jake talked about different methods for this on the Blackout podcast last night. And hold on, I'm going to sneeze.
Okay, so Lloyd has just sneezed. What you don't realise is when he sneezes, his face turns purple and he looks like a gerbil. So that's always fun to see. Next time you're at a magic convention, if you're going to Newcastle, make sure that you see him sneezing and watch his face. He turns into a gerbil and he becomes purple. The reason I'm talking crap is because he was in the middle of talking and is still sneezing now. He's now on his fourth piece of tissue paper. A sheep has just wandered in behind him. Lloyd's just taking his trousers off.
Oh, sorry. I was just sliming all over the sheep. we were talking about different methods for this last night, like really wild methods. I'll talk again on the stages.
Okay. So Lloyd and Jake, if you don't know, they run something called the Back On podcast. It's on
the back. I can't stop sneezing.
There we go.
We were talking about really creative methods for this. And we were like, well, what could you use that would be situational or at least have context to it? Like, so in the terms of Hector, he uses a phone to aid in his method. Like Tommy Wonder says, hide the methods in the shadows, right? And I said, well, wouldn't it be cool to, what makes sense at least, to have a wine bowl? If you had, I'm going to sneeze. Here we go.
So, like I said, the Black Arts podcast, Jake Keane.
I'm back in the room. If you had a wine bottle, because it makes sense if you have a wine glass, to have a wine bottle or a, you know, champagne bottle on the table with you. I said, for a bit of conviction, you could have another glass and pour some wine into it. You could say, I don't know, if your script could be something along the lines of, every year I have a glass myself and a glass for my grandfather who's no longer with us. And I because he's no longer with us, I sit down at a table, I place his favorite playing card in because he showed me magic, and I sit there and remember him by having a drink, right? You use that as your script, but then you get a card named and whatever method you want to use to load it, when you take it from the deck, an index, whatever. But instead of it being a wine bottle, imagine that it was a, you know, the... you know the multiplying bottles gimmick where you can fit a glass inside it?
Yeah.
Or other bottles inside it? So imagine the wine bottle in the top half had some wine you could pour into your glass. And then you have the other glass on the table that has the card in it, but the wine bottle has another glass inside it, right? Hidden.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then what you do is you get the card that's been named palmed, You load that through a slit at the back of the dummy wine bottle and into that duplicate glass. Mm. And then on and off, kind of like Dean Dill's Blizzard, if you put the bottle in front of the glass with the card in it, as you maybe move your glass or you hand the deck up and you shuffle, you lift the bottle up and put it on top of the other. You switch it. So you reveal the card inside one glass and then hide the other glass completely bottle. Or just have one glass, you steal the label, you steal one card behind the label because it's shinned as you've dropped the other one. I don't know. We talked about a bunch of different things, but just trying to get creative with the methods and using the story to hide it, you know? Anyway, go listen to the Black Ops podcast if you want to hear like a much more deeper dive about that. The interesting question I've seen about this, though, was from, I think it was Rich Relish, maybe, who said, how does it come, what happens when you, if you buy a trick like Demi Deck and it's not for you, you want to resell it, how do you do that with, can you do that with this? Is it ethical to do that with this? How would it be done? Should you?
I don't think you could. I'm assuming that you're not going to get the video recording, because the whole point of this is they don't want it shared. So I imagine it's going to be a personal phone call and you have to make notes and that's all you're going to have. You're not going to have like a recording of the Zoom call afterwards, because they don't want it pirated or sent anywhere. Although that's still going to happen. Somebody's going to watch it and tell somebody. Yeah. Going to tell. So it's going to get out there. It's going to end up on some sort of knockoff website for $3. I just know it is at some point, but I don't think you could resell it. I don't think it's impossible. It's impossible because what can you resell? You can't resell the trick. Because that's always been an ethical problem, isn't it? Like, can you resell a download? Can you resell a book? People say yes, and some people say no. Because if you have resold a book and there's a trick that you perform in your walk-around set that you learn from that book or that download or that project every single time you perform, are you still allowed to perform that trick now that you've sold it? If it's a physical product, well, you can't, because you've got rid of the physical product. But if it's a book, you bought a book. I have just bought a book. I've got this book. Here we are.
What is it?
It's a great book. The pages are blank. We talked about it last week.
Oh, yeah.
Really enjoying this book. There's a signature duplication section in there, which is amazing, which I'm planning to do. If I sell this book, can I still use that? Because I've got my money back from buying this book. Like, it's the same with the with this world's most expensive card trick. You know, technically, you might be able to say, look, I bought this for $500. Give me 50 quid and I'll teach you how to do it. But that's kind of unethical, because you're still able to do it.
I'd file it under the same, in the same drawer as consultancy. You can't resell consultancy, you know.
No.
Theoretically. I mean, you could get a trick from a consultant and then resell that trick, but then that's a bit... Well, no, you just don't fucking do that. I don't know. Anyway, it's crazy. I do kind of like the model for certain tricks. If there are certain fantastic tricks that you really, really don't want many people doing, then this is one option, which has been done many times before. God, before the internet, that's pretty much the way you would learn the big tricks, right? You've heard all the stories of certain magicians tracking someone down, like Walter Scott, going to his house, teach me the fucking center deal and all these things. It was the only way it was done for the great pieces of magic in the past that nobody had the method to. So I kind of like it, just because it feels like, I don't know, it kind of feels a bit traditional the way I like that element to it. I just think they chose, and I might be completely wrong on the method. I might be, right? I just think they chose the wrong trick to launch it with. If this was like further down the line and they'd started off with some real fucking bangers, then I think they'd have a lot less scrutiny, and then they could have got away with ones like this. But just to reiterate, I really don't think this is what this one was for the profit. I think it was just for the artist.
Yeah,
I think they were serving the artist.
I think you're probably right. And I look forward to Blackpool. I'm sure I'm going to bump into someone who bought it, and I'd love to see it at Blackpool and the Ruskin. Please show it me. I'm not going to buy it. It's you know, like I say, if you want
a more basic version. This is not direct advertising, but I did put I think it's a really, really clean looking version on my Patreon, patreon.com/LloydB. I put it up yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. Card in a wine glass, and you literally just turn it over, and it's the named card. And it seems a lot, for me at least, compared, I don't know Hector's method, but it just seems a lot more direct and clean. So if you want to go and check that out, you're more than welcome to.
I will go and check that out. That's amazing.
Okay,
go on.
I can kind of show you here, but I am going to fucking ruin a card because my coffee glass is... Have I got another glass here? My coffee glass is wet. All right, I'm going to line it with some tissue paper. Like a scruffy cut. All right. I'll show you, Craig, so you can see.
I want to see. I will narrate this. So Lloyd has a coffee cup in front of him, and he has placed a card in
there. I can't see what card's in there, so we might get lucky, but name a card.
The six of clubs.
Or spades.
Either
it's up to you.
Nah, let's go clubs.
You might actually have to change it because this deck doesn't have a six of clubs in it. This is an old Abraxas deck. It's about 45 cards, so that one's not there.
Jack of Hearts.
Let me see. Do we even have that in here? Do you know what? I think we may have gotten lucky, Craig.
No way.
You know, I placed one card in the glass at the beginning.
Yes.
If you can see this, let me just turn this over. One card, the Jack of Hearts.
Oh, mate, that's really sweet. I love that.
Try and get this again. I've got coffee on my card now.
That's nice. That's really nice.
Not the Holy Grail by any stretch of the imagination, but you've got my Patreon. Go and watch it. A little bit on there.
That's great. I like that.
About a card's fucked. I've been using this deck for like a year or two. Anyway, you've got to get off now.
I've got to get off. I've got a day of one-to-ones with the gold members of the Netrick, so
I'm nice. Not sure.
And I will speak to you soon, Lloyd. But you've been at no point have you actually moaned about being part of this podcast. This is really exciting. I feel like we've turned a corner.
Well, it was a short one this week.
That's what she said.
Hey! Okay, I've got to bounce because I have stuff to do.
Tell everyone to have a shit week.
Yeah, well, quickly. The reason I was running around my room was because I was looking for my demi deck. I can't fucking find it anywhere. And it was in my suitcase from Miami. Yeah, because Kaylee's here. I have like 10 minutes to perform it. And... Okay. Right. I'll find it.
Lloyd wants everyone to have a shit week.
Have a shit week, cunt.
Don't forget to listen to the Back Arts podcast. Don't forget, we'll be back next Wednesday. And also, if you are at the Newcastle Magic Convention, the South Tyneside Magic Convention this weekend.
Yes, let's hang out.
Hang out with Lloyd Barnes. He's going to be there. And make sure that you go over and say hi. But we'll be back.
I've got to go, Craig. Very
soon. He's going. I'm going. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
We apologize for disrupting your normal daily schedule. You may now relax, tuck your deck back in, and resume your regular day-to-day life. Remember to subscribe to be notified the moment each new episode goes live every Wednesday. And join our Facebook group to continue the conversation. The link is in the description to this podcast. Thank you for listening to The Magic Podcast.